this gospel, this gospel story is one of those stories that really, in a sense, speaks for itself. What I mean by that is it doesn't need another story to explain it. I like to go into the conversation, but just a little bit more slowly, and like consider the questions that are asked and the things that are pointed out by Jesus and by this rich young ruler. So this rich young man goes up to Jesus, and the first thing he says is, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus' response is, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but God alone." We might be tempted to think that Jesus is saying, "I'm not God, so calm down. Yeah, I'm not, you're putting me up here, but I'm not." Actually, what Jesus is saying to this young man by saying, "Why do you call me good?" He's trying to point out what this young man has said about him by saying, "Good teacher. Do you realize what you just said about me by calling me good teacher? No one is good but God alone. Are you aware of what that means?" And to me, this is a similar question to when Jesus asks Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" There's that statement where Peter says that Jesus is the Son of God and he's the Messiah, before which Jesus said, who do people say that I am? And Peter said, "Oh, some say you're John the Baptist, some say you're Elijah, some say you're, well, I don't know, prophets, you're Moses back from the dead, or you're somebody back from the dead." And then Jesus says to Peter, "Okay, so that's what they say, but who do you say that I am?" In a similar way, Jesus is saying to this rich young man, "Why do you call me good? Do you know what you said about me? And if you did, would you still say that?" And right there, is the question. It's tied up with the question of what is Jesus worthy? If he's good, what does that mean? That God is really good, what is he worthy of? So then Jesus answers his question by saying, "Well, keep all the commandments. Don't defraud your neighbor, don't bear false witness, don't commit adultery, honor your father and mother, don't lie, don't steal. Keep all the commandments." And his response is that he's done all of this since he was young. And you might think, wow, that's pretty good. Like, he should say, "Oh, good Lord, I've done all this since I was young, and so I guess I'm all set." But that's not what he says. For some reason, maybe he regrets it. He regretted it 10 seconds later. He said, "I've done all of this since I was young. What still do I lack?" Doesn't that seem like an odd question? Like, why did he ask that? Why would he ask, "What am I still lacking?" For, you know, imagine yourself being Jesus, or if I could imagine myself being Jesus, we might be tempted to say, "You're not really lacking in anything. You've really done all this since you were young. Like, congratulations. Can I shake your hand? Like, that's amazing. You want to do more?" It's really impressive that you've been able to follow all these commandments. Of course, that's not what Jesus says. What Jesus says is, sell everything, give it to the poor, and come and follow me. But before he says that, this is the part that it's easy to skip over. He looks at him and he loves him. Jesus looks at him and he loves him, and he says, sell everything, give it to the poor, come and follow me. And that is not something that he says to everyone. To some people, if they get healed or if they have an encounter with Jesus, he might say to preach, go back and preach to the people where you came from. The Samaritan woman at the well did that. The Gerasene, you know, guy who was demon-possessed, he did that. To some people, Jesus says, don't tell anyone yet. Don't preach, and usually they do. But to this young man, he says, come and follow me. He's inviting him to be one of the 12, it would seem. And so it's kind of a big invitation. But this young man walks away sad because he had many possessions. And then Jesus points out to the to those following him, it's really hard to enter heaven if you're wealthy. It's really hard. And that could be material wealth in terms of, you know, dollar bills and, you know, ones and zeros in a bank account, or other forms of attachment to the world. And although wealth isn't evil, the love of it is. And the Lord is inviting us to perhaps evaluate where our hearts are most attached. Because this rich young man, he was living the commandments. He was following God. He would go to synagogue. Well, temple, it wasn't synagogue yet. But he would go to church in modern time. Modern terms. He would go to church. He was doing everything right. He was living a good life. And yet in his heart, there was a desire for something more. There was something that was restless, perhaps, in his heart. That's how I read his question. What still do I lack? Lord, I've done all this since I was young. I've kept all the commandments. What do I still lack? And he's been living, perhaps, what you might consider a life of holy obligation, but he wants a life of holy desire, where it's not about, did I do things right or have I done enough? I want to do more. Why? I don't know what's going on in this man's heart, but I can say that I've been there myself with Jesus and had that conversation with him and certainly regretted his response, at least at first, just as this rich young man did. And I think that it's a good reminder to us, though, because here's the thing about this rich young man. He goes to Jesus and he says, what still do I lack? And Jesus says, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, come and follow me. If you have the same conversation with Jesus, he might not tell you the exact same thing. Sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and join a Carthusian monastery, or I don't know. He might not tell you that, because your relationship with him is going to be some place, hopefully, where he speaks for himself in a very personal way to you, in a way that you can't actually read in the catechism. There's not a church teaching on what you are supposed to give the Lord today, or for the next 10 years, or for the next 30. There isn't one. That unfolds in your prayer, your relationship, your conversation with Jesus, where we let him speak for himself. And when we let him speak for himself, his response can sometimes surprise us, and we don't just assume, well, what this is what Jesus would say. What he would say is, I should probably... And then we fill in the blank with something that we think is what he would say, but we might be speaking for him. So when we go to the Lord with this, it's when we have that restlessness of, I'm living a life of holy obligation, but I know that I'm made for a life of holy desire. There's a holy obligation to Jesus, and that's good and true, but there's a desire for more. Lord, what do I still lack? I actually want you to ask me for more. And then let the Lord speak. And then, you know, you might regret it, at least at first. And I remember being in a lot of the young men in high school ministry, speaking to them, they want to pray, they want to be holy, they want God. There's a desire for God. They want to be spiritual warriors, especially those. I had this men's group that was a group of 12. It just happened to be a group of 12. I didn't do that on purpose. And they wanted to pray, but a lot of them struggled because they were like, well, I want to pray, but I try to keep it to the rosary or just reading the Bible, but not talking to God about the Bible because, you know, I mean, a little bit of silent prayer, but I don't really want to hear God say too much, you know. Because, you know, I'm single, I'm Catholic. There's some bad things that God could tell me that he wants me to do. And so it's this game of fear versus courage. How honestly am I going to pray? Am I going to let God speak to me? And if he does, maybe he's going to ask me for something I didn't want to give. But the good news is this. God is never going to ask you for something that you don't desire to give. That is why when the rich young man walked away, he was, yeah, he was sad. That's an audience participation. If you walk away sad by not giving Jesus something that he asks for, have you ever done that? I've done that. And that was actually how I experienced my vocation at first, as I've talked to you about before. I was not going to break up with my girlfriend in college when the Lord asked. I said, oh, thanks for, why did I pray that prayer, Lord? Oh, why? That was so stupid. Why did I ask you for that? Lord, I'll give you anything. Like, do you want me to be celibate and be a priest? I'll give you anything. Oh, it's funny that you mentioned that. I would like that. Oh, never mind. Why did I say that? Did I mean it? Was I just being dramatic? I was definitely full of myself. And he said, yeah, I want that. And I said, no. And I walked away. That's what happens when we don't give Jesus what he asks for. He doesn't ask us for something that we don't actually desire to give. It might hurt. And it usually does. But we actually, when we love somebody, we don't want to be asked to give the minimal amount. When we love somebody, we actually want to be asked to give more. We, at least at times, right? We want to be sacrificial in our love. And Jesus, there on the cross, as I like to compare him to a little, like, he's like, I love you this much. And I was like, oh, that's great, Lord. And I like the way little kids talk. And I love you this, maybe this much. But don't, this is really vulnerable and painful. And yet, that's the image of love, and we're made to love. And so, if the Lord is working in your heart in some way to give, to ask him for more, and you'll know this if you're restless. You'll know this if there's a restlessness in your heart that says, yeah, I'm following the commandments, I'm kind of living the life. I'm not really going against the Lord in some big way, but I feel like there's got to be more. That's not something to just ignore and walk past. That movement in your heart might be the Lord drawing you into a conversation like this rich young man and saying to Jesus, Lord, what still do I lack? Why do I have this restlessness? Is there something that you would like me to offer you or to you would like to offer me? And to allow the Lord to speak for himself. And when he does, when we hear the Lord speak, there is sometimes a fear about what he asks, sometimes an excitement about what he asks. Oftentimes, though, there's a great deep level of peace when we say yes. Even if it's difficult, there's a peace there. And we have to really acknowledge in the depths of our hearts what is Jesus worthy? Is he worthy of everything? Is he worthy of more than what I'm giving him today? And if so, in what way is he inviting me to offer myself in a deeper generosity in that relationship?